This is Lawson State, a.k.a. Perry Tate. And listen, if you're wrong with shenanigans, do not change that dial, because I'm going to come get you, son.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, check one, check two. Had to blow the dust off this microphone. Hello.
It's been ages, man. We needed archaeologists to find our equipment, man. Stuck in the fossils.
Fossils. So, guys, welcome to the show. I am Scott, and that there is Mike, and we are, I guess, what makes up Verbal Shenanigans. I know we've been a little... Clunky. This summer, you know, but all great radio stations do that, right? They take breaks in the summer, people go on vacation, and, you know.
Most sports stations or people take off during the summer just because football's starting up and they can't take time off. So.
Right, exactly. So that's what we were doing. We can't take time off once the fall starts, so, you know, we had to kind of round things out here, so... it's good to be back. Mike, you remember how to do this?
I say gibberish into the microphone, and then you go, what? And then I go, next topic.
And really, it hasn't been, to the listeners, it hasn't been that long, because it's only been, we've only been off a week, but we also had another week break in there. But for us, we sometimes record interviews ahead of time. We sometimes record pieces in different places, so we sometimes episodes are kind of pieced together and done months ahead of time, not months, like a week or two ahead of time, and so I don't think we've actually sat down on the mics in 3 weeks or so.
It's been a decent amount there, buddy. It could be about 3 weeks.
So tell the listeners.
Maybe this time we'll have interesting things to say.
Well, I am super prepared, just to let you know.
I'm really, never prepared.
Really, really prepared.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So I went to the local Kroger today, and I bought fabric softener. I mean, not my usual fabric softener. I mean, we brought this up about a month and a half ago, but, I like that fabric softener, but I said to myself, you know, I got to start saving some pennies and all, you know. I like the name brand, but I had to go with the Kroger brand.
You know, I asked you not to share my story, and yet you just go ahead and, you know, it for the audience.
I mean, I've been gone for 3 weeks. I've been relaxing. I didn't prepare to entertain thousands upon millions tonight, but here I am. I'm going to give it a go. I mean, my C plus is better than most A minuses, but yeah.
Now, tell the listeners exactly how much you missed me over these couple weeks.
It was kind of awkward to come home on a Monday and say, honey, I guess we can talk to each other.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you.
I mean, we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary, so I guess I should have a couple words with the lady here and there. So,
yeah, I guess one or two would suffice. It's fine, but
yeah,
anything more than that gets really difficult.
I just mentioned dogs and Disney, and then she yabbers on, and then I'm like, all right, I'm good for another month.
Yes. So hold on 1 second. All right, sorry, I'm back. Had a little tech problem. A lot of buzz going on in my headset there. So we should be back and rocking, and my voice should sound better than ever. Do you remember?
I'd get in our cable.
Do you remember the other radio show we worked in, where we met each other, And I guess we could tell. I don't know if we ever really broke that down, what started to happen towards the end of that show.
Yeah, we could chat about it. I think it's water under the bridge.
Oh, I don't really care. So we worked on this show, this Johnny Watson show, funny comic. And the show started, you know, I joined the show one night. I was at an open mic. And started talking to the host, and he, I didn't know, I had some tech ability, mixer ability, whatever, and he said, yeah, come on down, and I think, bro, you had just started helping them out at the time, too, right?
I would probably, yeah, I would say relatively early on, probably a month or so.
Okay, yeah, so you weren't in deep either.
No.
So right away, the first thing we noticed was that, or first thing I noticed was like, wow, there are a lot of guys speaking on this show. There happened, like, I think in its early renditions, there was at least one, two, three, four, about five.
I think six to start. So yeah, the host, Gene, who ran the comedy club, the co-host, Alex Spacha. I mean, generally I would have a mic, but I rarely would get a point to actually talk.
Doug.
Yeah. So six.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. So when you joined, seven.
Yeah. So the first couple of times I was even there, I was kind of sitting by you. You were running like the computer internet side of it, kind of, and I was kind of hooking up the audio and right away, I knew there was a lot of audio problems before that. And we had it. So cutting the story shorter, we got it to a good point where the sound was good. The call-ins were good. And we started really diving in. And this is when me and you were both kind of really doing a comedy thing. It was exciting at one point, or it felt exciting. It was fun to work.
It was enjoyable. It didn't feel like work at that time. It was Mondays kind of doing the setup, kind of getting things on the go, doing a show,
having fun.
It wasn't a burden at the beginning. And it was, I mean, what helped out was they put a little money into it and, you know, where you can get some good wires that actually stretched out properly and good mics. So at the beginning, it's like, okay, I mean,
yeah.
And we had some actual discussions about monologues and sketches and
we were writing some sketches. I was coming up with like these PowerPoint things for our Christmas, whatever. So but as time went on a little bit, the show, the guy who hosted the show just seemed to allow anybody and everybody kind of onto the show. Before you know it, I think we had like 9-10 people showing up to different shows, and we were writing out segments and time codes, like when people would come on, and it just started getting more and more out of control where, you know, say the show was an hour and a half, it would be planned down to the minute with these segments, and people wouldn't have their segments, and it just started becoming, you know, way, way, way too many people. So that started spiraling out of control where it didn't really become enjoyable, and then would really kind of set the show off, at least for me. They decided to, so we had just finally kind of dialed in the sound, things were sounding good. We had just dialed in the kind of production, whose role was what. We had labeled things. If you remember, we like labeled all the cables that stretched across. So it was kind of like if you weren't there or I weren't there, like people could have probably figured it out. We had headphone extenders for everyone and a headphone amplifier. It was really nice.
Yeah, and we'll add to it. We did all that on extra free time. We gave up our free time to do the show, but that was like a Sunday evening.
Yep.
We drove up there. That was like a 45-minute drive for you and I back in that time.
Yep.
To just go through every single wire, every single microphone, headset, label it, and even like chart exactly everywhere where everybody would sit and so forth.
Yeah, and even to a certain extent, I still liked that because it was still production in some way. It was still it still felt like the show was moving forward rather than backwards. And we had finally got it dialed down to where, hey, this is Mike's mic, this is Johnny's mic, this is John's. Like, where people sat and how the show and the seating arrangement and everything was kind of good. Still too many people, but we did have enough mics dialed in. We had a time for people to get to sound check, and it was going good. And it was a lot of work. But what started to happen, then he decided, so now guys, I know sound, you know, on a level where video production, doing a podcast, setting up a couple mics, dialed it, more analog stuff. And then he decided we needed, for some reason, to get, I believe it was a 32-channel digital mixing board.
Yeah, it was literally something you would see at Giant Stadium if, like, U2 was playing there. I even remember, like, a week after the purchase, I remember I went to, I think it was Breaking Benjamin, went to see him, and I literally looked down at the soundboard. I'm like, oh my god, that's what we have for an 8-person podcast.
Dude, it was a whole different system, and all the wires that we had to run were completely different. We had to get adapters for them. I didn't know the system. He wanted me to learn it. I went one day up into some music shop up in Northwest Jersey, and it gave me like a 20-minute crash course. And it was just all digital menus. And listen, digital menus are tough. Like, you know, unless you're working with it every day, it's like you got to learn them and figure it out. And he was insistent on, we needed to use that soundboard as if that soundboard was going to make the content of the show somehow amazing.
And kind of add to some of it, literally every person on the podcast told him, don't get this. We don't need it. Do not get this. And if I recall, we did one episode with it. Everybody's headphones only worked mono, yeah, where it came through one ear. I can't remember if there was anything really else that happened, but I just remember how the episode ended, and he was still trying to convince everybody. He's like, wasn't that crisp? That was smooth. That was so smooth. So much better.
So on my end, like, and you know, kind of essentially being in charge of the audio, that was like, it was a very big disappointment. Like, it was really hard, and like, we didn't have the right cables, and I was trying to learn on the fly and setting up 8 million people to talk. And I really liked when we kind of set it up, and then we were able to create content and participate. I had no idea what was going on after a while. Now, on your end, things started to, as far as the internet, it would go down every single week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're using a wireless router at a comedy show. And that's no offense to the Comedy Cove or anything like that, but it's not a setup where if you're basically putting us at a point where we're making somewhat a professional show, it can't be the main source. You know, it has to be something where you plug right into the router, yeah, and have that connection and so forth. So literally every week we probably be at best 10 minutes into the show and have to stop. Or some weeks I even remember we couldn't even record the show because,
yep,
the internet was so sloppy. And then add to it, if you try to troubleshoot it anyway, the owners of the Comedy Cove would just get upset because they're like, oh, we couldn't run bills or something to that effect.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
so you had no time to work on it. There was no way it was stable. But at the same time, people are getting aggravated because you have like 14 people on the set and you have no internet to do a show.
Yeah. So between the internet, the sound, and then overall the content and the amount of people, just everything started just going quickly downhill. We tried doing sketch comedy shows. And it just started doing things that it wasn't. It was supposed to be a weekly radio show where the host and his mother were the two main pieces to the show, and gotta say they were good together. They always were good together, and it was, you know, a couple people. If they narrowed it down to like 5 people, I think the show would have been, it could have possibly still been going, who knows. But everything kind of crumbled. And but the reason I brought this up, I remember we're going to the store, and he must have got somebody's credit card. We probably know whose it was. And
mm-hmm.
I remember, like, he was like trying to pick out cables, And, you know, cables, when you guys go to buy cables, it adds up quickly when you're trying to cable out something. So, like, what brought that up to me right now is my cable wasn't working. I went downstairs to get another one, and I was like, man, I haven't bought cables in a long time. And I just remember him being like, what's the finest cable you have?
Bring me the best cable, the ones meant for kings.
And it was like the Mogami gold-plated. So it was like $60 for like a 20-foot cable.
What's that metal that comes from Wakanda? I think our cables had that at the end. Vibranium, that's it. That's what it kind of was right there. Yeah, so there. I mean, to kind of add to the story, I mean, the money getting put in there for kind of a simple show was a real head-scratcher. Even when some things were needed, it wasn't like, okay, this is a little improvement. It was, wow, what the heck is going on here? Kind of also add to it, as more and more people got on the show and the setup, like at first it was, all right, when I get out of work, I'll head down and start working on the show. It got to the point where I had to like sneak out like 15 minutes early just to start it, and add to it, it had to be so precise about it. Like, you, I really felt, and this is not just you and I talking, I really felt when you and I were just the main people working on it, it got set up right. And we had some good helpers, but there was too many cooks in the kitchen. So every time I go there and I see somebody there, I almost cringe. It's almost like, I don't want your help. Go away. I know it's here. And then just everything added to it, because all the tables were different sizes, we could never figure out the combination to make the U to set up like 14 mics. Then also add to it, we had to get the state-of-the-art camera system iPhones.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
So in the buying process, it was purchased basically like these discs that you put a iPhone in that you can control remotely to kind of get different views and so forth. And
they're little tripods, kind of little. You can control the tripods, but they were really cool. But you can control them with your phone or your iPad and move them around and hook them to a switcher.
Yeah, so we had to deal with getting that ready. I remember the one time I went out of my way to say absolutely not was when I heard the rumor that we were going to get a green screen to do green screen stuff for the show, where I was just like, absolutely not. I'm here easily 2 hours before the podcast starts, where either the people who are helping almost hinders me, or the people who could help decide to show up 1 minute before the show and basically get a chunk
and talk
of
the
talk time
show.
On the show. Then add to it, then there was the complainers of the show, where when you have 14, obviously when you have 14 mics, people are going to complain, I don't have enough talk time. But then there were certain people who did absolutely nothing for the show, and they were given basically a full sketch every week. Mm-hmm. Where I remember, like, when I joined the podcast, it's like, you know, we can't all talk over each other, so wait for your opening to talk, and that could take an hour. That's not even an exaggeration, because every single person had their opinion and had to say it at that moment. And there was times where they would get on tangents and it would just be a 10-minute thing, which was god awful. But you would do all that work and then at the end of the night have to put all the tables back and all the equipment back. So I wasn't getting home to probably around 10:30, 11 o'clock.
So what started as, hey, maybe okay, half hour to 45 minutes, get it set up, you know, hour and a half show, hour, you know, it was like a hang, turned into like a 5-6 hour ordeal that was completely not worth it. And Yeah, I think I mentally blocked out the camera period of that show, because not only that, we went from an audio show, and where, listen, people do YouTube stuff all the time. Little webcams would have been perfectly fine. Okay, just three webcams or whatever. We went to he needed the cameras that switch around and move, and that, which it required another person to control just the cameras for the show. So we had another guy, Steve, that had to sit there and try to get them, and they never all worked correctly. And
never.
Moving them, they would just move all way too fast. It was ridiculously, it was just way too much for, I mean, if you're starting a new show, you got to go bare bones and just make the content the best it is. Yeah, you get that audio crisp and perfect, and maybe you get a couple cams up and your connection good. But after that, like, it almost became like an obsession. Like, oh, let's get every new piece of gear and try to get them going. You could have worked 8 hours a day just trying to get that show going.
And let me add to that, one time it got me uber frustrated. If you recall, I tried to get, like, as we were trying to get serious, I'm like, I called for, like, meetings about the show.
Yep.
I wanted another day, but a lot of people didn't want to do it, so we did the day of. And I tried to, like, bring my IT manager expertise to just kind of like project management. Okay, this is what we said we're going to work on, where we at,
yep,
kind of get updates with everything. And I'll never forget when, as we were talking about, okay, we got to build this YouTube presence, I always would go over the show and look over it. And one Friday, I remember searching for it, and I basically got in the group chat. I'm like, where's the show?
Yep.
And then shows up. I see it. I said, the show is not there. No, the show's up. It spent a week as a private video, and it just drove me absolutely berserk. I said, I worked 8 hours because we needed a YouTube presence, and not a single person bothered to check to see if we had a YouTube video up.
I remember being on our conference call one day at the mall. I think it was close to the Christmas season, and I was at the mall for an hour on the phone checking in and walking around the mall, because that's how, like, into it I was. And it just was not, it just completely, just, you get 16 people and three people care, one person BS's and the rest of them just want to show up, it doesn't work. And then I guess another thing before we wrap this part up here, was always the the person dangling the carrot, like, oh, we got interest in Chicago at some radio station. Oh, we got our numbers are doing so good on Blog Talk, blah 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 blah. Which all of it was just complete BS. We weren't heard by anybody.
No, we never got an official number at any point whatsoever, even though, quote unquote, they love us. Where you still go, okay, who is they? Manning the computer, it had like a phone line. At no point did any quote unquote audience member call in to the show to check in on.
I think we
stuff.
Had one, Coach Tom Whiteley or whatever his name was. He was the only guy that ever.
Well, he'd be like a guest,
right,
for the most part, but yeah, he wasn't. It wasn't like, hey guys, first time, long time, love the show.
Yeah.
And then also add to it, what also drove me nuts was, I remember during the summer hiatus, the first summer hiatus, I wanted to kind of like work on comedy stuff. I wanted to do like a writing session or whatever. And I got basically blackmailed into sticking around for the political summer show, if you will, from our co-host, Johnny Hollywood.
Really? I don't think I ever knew this part.
Yeah, well, I think that might have been like the year before you. Like, I would do it sporadically, not all the time before you, but it was basically when Johnny would go away to do his
summer stuff. I do remember that.
I remember I was going to go down because some comedians had like a roundtable writing session. I'm like, oh, I want to work on it because I was kind of fresh in comedy, trying to get some confidence. And then, like, I got the guilt trip about, oh, because Johnny's not doing the show, the board. And I'm like, well, I want to do some writing. And then, like, I was told, you know what, B-Lo, you start your own, you can do it. You can start your own writing group. And all where I looked at him like, well, no, I can't. I don't really know anybody in this industry whatsoever. Not, I'm even including open micers. And then I had to do a show, and all I was talking about is, you know what's wrong with the Democrats?
Totally true.
I totally tuned out. I remember one show, he, like, chatted for, like, an hour, and they turned to me, and they're like, what are your thoughts, Mike? And I just turned to him, like, I have no clue what you're talking about, and I just went back to the board.
So, I mean, looking back on it, I don't, obviously it wasn't all bad. I was able to bring you on for what are we on, 200 probably 30 something episodes together. It spurred a whole new show, which we've talked to. And that was the other thing. We're going to get some massive guests. We're going to have all these great guests. And I think we had local comics that stopped at the comedy club. I think that was our guests. I think it was an author on one time.
And I guess that the thing that ended it all was the host of the show basically, I think he kind of basically asked for money from the comedy club to do the show, which they're like, absolutely not. There's nothing we're gaining from this. So we were going to go into a new place.
And
went to the Oak Barrel in West Orange, which was like another, I think it was like another 30 minutes away from my house, where I pretty much refused to go up there for like an hour drive to do it. Then it ended up in your basement.
It did. And it did.
If I recall, we did Verbal Shenanigans number 25 in your basement, or 26. Comedians are dumb.
And it was getting close in the basement. Like, we were getting close to where it kind of looked cool. We thought we had a setup going. It was getting close to being very possible to do it down there, but I don't know. The commitment just remember we like maybe mounted lights on the one like beam in my basement, and we lit the, we had the bar where three people would sit. We figured it all out. We figured out how to get his mother in.
And I think the ending was there was a conspiracy on who said something about who shared something with Missy Allen.
Oh yeah, my favorite comic.
Yeah, it was something about somebody told Missy Allen we were making fun of, or Watson was making fun of her. Then everybody was staring at each other like, no, we didn't do it. And the mystery was never solved, and the show broke up.
Yeah. It was dead.
Just like the Beatles.
It was dead before it ever moved to my house or any new location. It was dead long before that happened. But I mean, I guess it wasn't all bad. It was a lot of time. It turned into crap. But hey, I mean, look where we've come so far since then. And it was cool to like it kind of at that point just kind of getting into comedy and being really new. It was a good way to kind of be around the club and be involved and stuff. So it wasn't. Wasn't all bad.
No. I did see Watson's penis in the end, but that's another story.
Oh, well.
Tune in next week.
So the show was dead after that.
Well, that was dead too when I saw it.
Naturally segueing into guest time, Merlu. So if you're just tuning in, if this is your first week, tuning in, we talk about life, talk about things, play games sometimes, do a bunch of stupid stuff, and then we always generally, I don't think that goes together, but I know for the last, 200 episodes, 100-something episodes, we have had a guest, and we continue that tradition on today. Berlu, who we got?
We will be talking with Ryan Weimer, who is the president of Magic Wheelchair, a nonprofit organization that helps build custom Halloween costumes for special needs children in wheelchairs. So we're going to be chatting with him about the whole organization and what's it like helping out special needs people.
Awesome. Yeah. So like after you hear this interview, check out, go on the website and check out some of the stuff they're able to accomplish. It's really cool. So here's our interview. Let's do it.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing great. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. Where are we calling you from?
I'm in Oregon.
Oh, very nice. Very nice on the west side.
Yep, where are you guys at?
My friend Scott here is up in New Jersey where I used to live, and I'm now currently in Georgia.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yep. A little spread out. Triangle podcast of the United States of America, right?
Yeah,
now.
Right.
So, Ryan, I mean, obviously, we're going to jump into everything about the magic wheelchair and what you've done here, but let's start kind of from your beginnings. And getting into something like this, when you were growing up, were you a huge Halloween kid? Was that your holiday?
Yeah, I really liked it. I don't know. I mean, I didn't make like big monster suits when I was a kid, but I liked it. I liked dressing up, and I did like building stuff as a kid, but I didn't ever do anything big really for Halloween until I had kids.
So the two things took a while to come together then, basically.
Yeah, I always liked Halloween, but wasn't like, you know,
you gotta like one of them people in September. 38 days ago.
Yeah. Like your big, huge cosplayers that go all out. No, not really. That's not really how I was. I always enjoyed Halloween. I always loved dressing up, and I mean that just kind of led into, well, how do we dress up these kids in their wheelchairs? You know.
Now, what was your background building wise? Were you a carpenter, or like, or is this just a hobby?
Yeah, no, I'm a nurse. I'm a registered nurse, and no schooling. I've always really enjoyed special effects, and I love watching the special features on movies where they talk about special effects and stuff. Just always really intrigued me, and I've always liked building stuff, you know, and built forts as a kid and built cardboard armor and, you know, you just kind of figure it out. And then, well, nowadays you can just jump online and there's tons of videos about anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and since the web, it kind of make things simple nowadays. And
yeah.
So let's get to the beginnings of everything. Obviously, from what I read up, this started around 2008 with your own child. Can you give us our audience a little background on the story of when this all started with your working with your child for Halloween?
Yeah. So my kids. Had three kids that were born with, we've had five kids, but three of them were born with a form of muscular dystrophy called spinal muscular atrophy. And our oldest is, his name is Keaton. He's 13 now. When he was three, he had his powered wheelchair. That was his first Halloween with the powered wheelchair. And, you know, like all good parents, you ask your kid what they want to be for Halloween, and he said he wanted to be a pirate. And I'm just looking at him in his chair, and well, we could dress him up as a pirate, but he's got this chair, and you know, what can we do with that? And I just thought, well, I bet we could build a pirate ship around it. And you know, at that point, it wasn't. At least I didn't know a whole lot of videos of how-tos, and so it was really whatever I could find at Lowe's and Home Depot, you know, and just built a pirate ship out of wood and with sails and all. And what was really cool about it is that, you know, all we were doing was dressing up our son for Halloween. But what we saw, you know, we've had our son, again, he was three at that time, and so we've experienced the different challenges of being a special needs family and being, you know, sticking out when we're out in public. People, you know, stare at you and stare at the kids, and it's not malicious, it's just different, right? And yeah. We just tend to get weird around things that are different, and I don't think it's ever malicious. It's just how we are in society. When we see something different, we kind of freeze up. And so we'd experienced that. And even when Keaton was three and cruising around in his wheelchair, that costume on there, I mean, he was having a blast. He was Captain Keeters. I mean, what kid doesn't want their own pirate ship? And, you know, he's
absolutely
fully clad in this pirate ship and all of his gear. And but for us as parents, you know, seeing that kind of awkwardness that people would normally show around him, from kids to adults, you know, that whole awkwardness was just swallowed up in that costume. And you know, it was a completely different experience for him, where everybody came right up to him and started talking to him. And it was incredible to experience that as a father. And for him, I'm sure that was incredible too, because, you know, he wants to doesn't want to be just stared at and looked at a distance, especially kids his age. You know, he wants friends, and just like any other kiddo. And it was just great that this costume somehow created this bridge that was easier for people to walk over and say hello to him, and blossom. It was a really, really cool experience.
Yeah. So after you do the pirate ship and whatnot, what starts to happen after that? You start getting noticed. So, you start to get inquiries on to make other ones. What happened?
I mean, from that very moment, you know, I thought. Because again, I'm seeing Keaton cruise down the street and people paying attention to him and coming right up to him. And I thought about other families like mine and, you know, people like, oh, that, what an incredible idea. You should, you know, create a business and sell those. And I didn't ever want to create a business and sell them. But I was in nursing school at the time, and I kept building costumes for my kids, and had always thought about starting a nonprofit to be able to create that experience for other families. And, you know, fast forward till 2014, and it's just crazy how things, and I believe this is true anytime you want to bring something good and wonderful and right to the world, and things just started to align. And I had this, I didn't know how to start a nonprofit, you know, just kind of a simple dude. And by then, you know, I was done with nursing school and working as a nurse, and moved from Eastern Oregon to a small town in Eastern Oregon to Salem, Oregon. And you know, I talked about starting a nonprofit, met a friend at church, and he was in law school and said, hey, man, I don't know if you realize that I'm actually going to school to be a nonprofit lawyer. And and that just kind of started things. We did a Kickstarter to raise money to build Toothless. So at 2014, my son wanted to be Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And you know, shoot, when this actually happened every year too. We'd always ask for something that would push the bounds of what I could do, you know, which was cool, but also tense and, you know, intimidating. And Toothless is super iconic, right?
Right.
Yeah, everybody knows. Well, it, just about anybody that has kids should know who Toothless is. So when he asked to be Toothless, I didn't know how the heck I was going to build him. You know, I jumped online and looked for ideas, and I stumbled across the Stan Winston School of Character Arts. And Stan Winston is an Academy Award-winning special effects artist. The studio is responsible for some huge blockbusters when I was growing up, Jurassic Park and Terminator and Aliens and Predator. That's all Stan Winston studio, the practical effects. Anyways, when Stan passed away, his son and son-in-law started Stan Winston School of Character Arts to kind of keep that, Stan was big at teaching and trying to keep practical effects current. And, that was a big passion of Stan's, and his son and son-in-law kept that passion going and started that school. Anyway, it's on there. I found this incredible tutorial working with foam. They do it in Hollywood, foam fabrication, and a man by the name of Ted Haynes, who works at Legacy Effects, which is Stan's studio. And anyways, I fell in love with the Stan Winston School, signed up right away, watched the tutorials, just ate it up, because I love that stuff. I love special effects. And if you're interested in learning special effects, then Stan Winston School is incredible. All current Hollywood professionals that work in the special effects industry that teach things that they've learned over their entire careers. And it's just an amazing, amazing resource. When I was getting to build, it was pretty expensive to get some of the materials, more than my wife would allow me to spend on building Toothless. And we, you know, I wanted to start a nonprofit, and I thought, oh, this would be great. Let's raise money to build Toothless and show people what we want to do and have a stretch goal of starting a nonprofit. And we got the Stan Winston School involved. And from there, that's where it all started from. We raised enough money to start a nonprofit, and then 2015, we started our first year of builds. And we did, I think we did 8 builds that first year. We did 5 here from Portland down to Eugene. And then we did some in Georgia and some in Florida. So, that's how it started.
Well, I mean, from your original times to now, how long does it take to go from concept to creation? And when they're out of state, do you come down to help set it up, or do you do the family to put on the wheelchair?
Well, we that first year, we wanted to operate, if we were going to grow this thing, because our mission is to really build for every kiddo in a wheelchair, then it needed to be replicatable. So we wanted to get local builders building for local kids. So then it creates this community-driven project. Unfortunately, that first year, local, we had kids here, and we had some builders in Seattle, a couple builders in the Portland area, and then actually a builder in California. And so that's how we did our first year. But so we have local builders, that local volunteers that do the builds. And we started a builders chat group on Facebook, and we have been doing monthly builders conferences where we'd have some instruction on some specific material or techniques, and have volunteers be able to ask questions Everybody wants to help each other, and then all of our volunteers get access to the Stan Winston School too. So we've got, and we get more and more people coming on board wanting to help out and provide resources, and it's crazy. Our first year we went from 8 builds to last year we did 88 builds.
Wow.
All over the country. So it just keeps growing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the you know, the pictures from 2018 now, and there are just so many different things, from Captain America to school buses to a monster and firefighter. Like, they're just all like really interesting, TIE fighters and X-wings and you name it. Like, after doing all these or being involved in them or seeing them, is there one that sticks out to you as your favorite build, or you just you love them all individually, or is there one that, you know, you were really amazed that came together?
I mean, I love them all. I love the effort that everybody puts into them is incredible, and that's really the magic right there.
Yeah.
And when you see these kids, when they see them, I mean, they just light up. And oftentimes I think when they, because it's always their idea, right?
Right.
They're kind of the director, and they tell us what they want us to build, and then it's kind of their imagination and our hands and skills. And so I think oftentimes they have this expectation based on maybe what they've seen someone else build. And I think more often than not, we far exceed those expectations, and, you know, they're just blown away by what we end up doing. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so mm-hmm. I really dig the Star Wars builds. We've been going to San Diego Comic-Con for the last, a couple of years. We went this year too. This year we actually, well, last year we had a booth too, but this year we had our own magic wheelchair booth, which is just incredible. I mean, getting a booth at San Diego Comic-Con is nearly impossible. But
no.
2017 we did, we put the Justice League together. So we had kids, nice. Local kids in California, and we did the Justice League. And then last year we did Star Wars, and we brought kids from all over the country and flew them out. They got to go to San Diego and Comic-Con, and we did Star Wars builds.
That's awesome.
And, the Rancor is pretty freaking rad. I love how they pulled that off. And that's done by Tom and his shop.
When you get the requests from people to come in, is there any kind of limitations on certain things, like the brand of the wheelchair or the condition of the child or anything that has to be factored in on the build?
Yeah. All of the above. I mean, you have to, each one of these is custom made, you know, to fit on that wheelchair. So yeah, you got to get measurements and then there's different types of wheelchairs. There's powered wheelchairs, there's manual wheelchairs. I mean, we built on stroller type of wheelchairs, and so yeah, you got to keep in mind weights and size and what's the family planning on doing on Halloween and what kind of vehicle do they have to hold us in, and so you build to what is practical for them. That's what we hope that our builders do, and you know, our builders are pretty good at delivering that. Sometimes it's easy to get a little carried away, and you can build them too big. So, you know, you can build big. It's just gotta be able to come apart and be able to be stored and hauled around easier. And then, yeah, the kiddos, you know, if they need to be readily accessible because they have a trach or respiratory complications, then need to make sure that you keep that in mind. And, you know, if they have a feeding pump or, you know, you just build around their needs. And the other thing that we like to put in the costumes is these kiddos experience that those costumes from the inside of those costumes out. So we like to, you know, if it's a car, to have buttons and sounds and lights and or spaceship or whatever it is, just give it a little extra, something for them to do, something for them to experience from the inside.
Right.
Awesome. Obviously, I mean, this is some amazing work. How many people currently work for Magic Wheelchair? Is this like a full-time job for you, or are you a nurse as well?
Yep, I'm still a nurse. I couldn't even tell you how many people we have volunteers. Tons. I mean, we did almost 100 last year, and it's 100 different kiddos. It's 100 different build teams, and I mean they're teams. So typically it's a group of volunteers that get together.
Now, do you ever get tempted to build onto your own personal car? Like, you're not driving like a Tauntaun around, are you?
No, but you know, I've thought about. I want to build a cool costume for myself someday. I like that stuff.
You get a little jealous.
I always run out of time, which is fine because I build for my kids and it's awesome to be able to do that for my kids.
It really is awesome work, and I really love just like scrolling through the different pictures. It's almost amazing what these people come up with and what you guys are able to do. I feel like you should have like a giant parade of all of these one time.
I know, right? We need to have like a giant Magic Wheelchair family reunion somewhere.
Awesome.
That'd be amazing.
Well, crap. We were the production company that puts on Mardi Gras. We reached out to them and thought how cool that would be. I don't know. Maybe Mardi Gras. I know there's like a child version of Mardi Gras. So that would probably be a little more appropriate.
Yeah. I can't picture Magic Wheelchair like falling behind.
Rolling deep in Mardi Gras.
Yeah, with like girls getting beads all over the place. I think you could find a better
PG-13 at the very least.
Yeah, we did hear there's a kids version of it. But we have had kids be in parades, and we've had, you know, 4 or 5 different costumes in a parade, and it's cool to see people light up. You know, it's cool to see these kids just, and they really become superstars. And kids that we build for that like going to Comic-Con, they become just superstars at these shows.
And
we've done really, really well at Comic-Cons.
Ryan, I think your work is really amazing. I think it's a really noble cause, and I hope you keep continuing to kind of push the boundaries of what you guys can do with these things and keep making kids happy out there. If people want to check out the group or association or the nonprofit or check out pictures or communicate or reach out to you, where's the best place to go?
Magicwheelchair.org. That's our website. And then we're on, I think, every social media platform out there, Facebook and Twitter. And I don't know, I'm kind of social media lame. But we have people that are not social media lame that manage those. So
that's awesome.
Well, yeah, Ryan, we really appreciate it. You're doing great work. Appreciate your work as a special needs nurse. My wife was a special needs nurse, so it's amazing care that you're putting into this. And it's just amazing. Out of curiosity, since you do all these wheelchairs from the different movies and so forth, has your company ever heard back from somebody from, like, the movies or something like that about the work you've done?
Yeah, we often will get, what's the social media platform where you throw up pictures?
Snapchat,
I don't know. That sounds like one. Again, on social media. Instagram, there you go. Gosh, sound like a 40-year-old man. that doesn't do social media.
What's that picture sending thing you children do?
Yeah, we've had people respond and different actors from some of the movies, and we worked with, when we did Star Wars, I mean, Tom Spina, he's the one that did his shop did the Rancor, and so we get some of these celebrity shops that come on board too and help build, and that have done things for Star Wars films, and we actually worked with Lucasfilm when we did San Diego last year.
It's awesome.
Built those costumes. We wanted to make sure we got their blessing, and Lucasfilm, well, it's Disney now, right? That's a hard nut to crack.
Yeah. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on and sharing what you do with us, and good luck with all the projects you got going on in the future.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate giving me some time to talk about what we do and spread that message. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much,
Definitely
Ryan.
Will.
All right, Berlew. Pretty fascinating. Pretty fascinating. If you were, God forbid, ever in a wheelchair, what would you want to design your wheelchair like?
Either the A-Team van or the General Lee.
Ooh, A-Team van is solid. A-Team.
Yeah.
I bet you General Lee's been done maybe somewhere along the line, at least.
I got to think that. I mean,
I feel like A-Team van, little niche, but when people saw it, I bet you they'd be like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Solid choice. I bet you all the Star Wars stuff has been done. So I would make my wheelchair Bartolo Colon.
Oh. Like, is it going to be like Krang where you're in Bartolo Colon's belly moving him?
That's correct. Like, I would kind of be the base. It would be big. Bartolo would go like another 5 feet higher than me. I'd just be this rolling Bartolo. I'm still shocked he hasn't got picked up this year yet.
There's so many teams with the bullpen issues. I figure one of them would be like, you know what? We just need an innings eater.
Yeah. Or exactly. An innings eater or... you got a starter goes down, throwing Bartolo for four innings and get to the bullpen, a bridge to the bullpen or something like that. I guarantee that guy could still pitch.
Or an extra pinch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
One career home run, the most epic home run ever seen.
It was pretty great. He did it as a Met, and I was watching that game, which is pretty, like, you know, I just feel good that game I happened to be watching live, and it was ridiculous.
I was watching it live too, and all. I just remember like the Mets announcer. I think he literally pooped his pants when that happened. Like, you could literally hear his voice crack. It's a long drive.
That's okay, because Bartolo definitely crapped his pants after that happened. There's no, there's no doubt.
That's why he only went five that day. He had to get a change of pants.
I love that dude, man. I love that dude. He's just. If you go look into some of his stats and some of, like, the amount of teams he's been on and look at his pictures when he came in the league and look at what he turned into, he definitely looks like he was the guy during the steroid era that tried everything and no matter what, and that's just how he turned out at the end. Like, that's the effects it had on him.
Yeah. I don't think he used speed. There's nothing about Bartolo Colon that yells speed.
Yeah. How about those Mets, baby? Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You guys came back, man. Congrats. You're right up there with our guys. Mm-hmm. And all.
If anything, I mean, it's a, I mean, I'm waiting for the Met letdown. I'm waiting for it, but it's been, at least they made this a season, which was not a season until June.
Well, I mean, as much as most Met fans hate their ownership, you got to give them credit when they went out and bought, and like everybody's saying, what the heck are you doing? They just stuck and they realized it's like we're one of the few teams that pitching is not a wholesale weakness of ours. Yep. And they got on a run and they're right with the Phillies and the Cubs and the Nationals. There's like eight teams in the wild card race right now, but I mean, they're right in the stretch. They seem to know what they're doing, and they even sold off. We got Vargas from you guys at the end. So,
yep. It was an interesting move. I don't think that's what they were actually planning. I feel like they were trying to corner the pitcher's market so they can get the most for Wheeler. But I think this completely worked out for them as far as making a run. I mean, and you look at them, they should not go on big losing streaks with that pitching staff. You know, like they should not lose five in a row, four in a row. No. You got arguably three aces and two number twos and threes, like two, three started. Like that's a hell of a rotation. And now the bullpen's starting to wake up a little bit. Very fun team to root for. They got a lot of young kids who say the right thing, do the right thing, play hard, no prima donnas coming out, you know, no expectations on them between Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil and Michael Conforto. Just a lot of good, I almost want to say company men, but good, like, just good ball players. You're never going to hear controversy about any of these guys. So they're very easy to root for.
And they're just comfortable right now. And like I said, I mean, looking at, it's no joke. You follow baseball, 90, even with the contenders, 90% of the contenders have some sort of pitching issue, whether it's starters or relievers. I mean, down the list, the Yankees, the Braves have bullpen problems. Dodgers have bullpen problems. Pretty much the Mets and the Astros are the only two teams where pitching is a strength right now. And we've seen it before where the one team that is different than everybody else can make a stretch at it. I mean,
all you gotta do is get
the Phillies right now. We had to bring back our manager from 2008 to remind them how to swing a bat. It's the most, it's sad almost.
That's up there. I feel like the Phillies and the Mets have a lot of parallels in our fan base is always very sarcastic because we expect a letdown. We've had some good runs over the years, but even the Mets this year bringing in their 84-year-old pitching coach. 84 years old. 84.
Well, this is how I pitched Whitey Ford back in the day.
Yeah, like, you know, he was like, all right, I just got to update my books and figure out how to pitch the black guys now. And
Wait, you guys don't have your own league?
Oh, no.
That's not in my notes. Oh, man.
Looks like it's going to be a late night at the office. Got to figure these guys out. But I do feel like the teams do have parallels because they've had very good years and then they've had a lot of dreck, and the fans are very, very sarcastic to their own team and kind of expect meltdowns. They kind of wait for it.
Well, I think we both have parallels in the disappointments, if you will. I mean, you guys had quite a few years where you went into it. We won free agency. We got the best batters. This is going to happen. Kind of like Philadelphia. We both had that heart-wrenching kind of World Series where 2015, that looked like the first stepping stone for the Mets. Instead, it was, I don't want to call it a fluke, but it was
a little bit hot team.
Afterwards, it was just like everybody said, we came close. And the Phillies, I mean, as great as 08 was, 09 was heart-wrenching just because we had to lose to the damn New York team in the end. So.
Yeah. So I guess real quick. So one of the reasons I couldn't podcast the other week was I blew out my ankle again. The day before vacation – I play in this volleyball league. Life at the, what do we call it? Lake Life? Lake Life.
Life at the Lake Life.
Yeah, Lake Life. we were playing in the champion. The team to get, okay, this was the best team. We were the best team. They were the second best team. We were playing. This was right before playoffs. When I was going to go on vacation was going to be the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And it also happened to be the team of a lot of people of where I used to work. Like, so I knew a lot of them.
So there's a little rivalry here.
Yeah. So we're winning 3-1, 2-1, and it's best of 5. And we go to start game 4. And I think it was the second point. I go up for a block kind of diagonally, and the ball is coming over. And I don't know if I landed on someone's shoe or I just completely just rolled my ankle, but I went down like a 250-pound sack of potatoes, like down. I thought I snapped my foot in half. I swear to God, I sprained my ankle probably 3 or 4 times pretty bad in my life. This did not feel the same. This felt like, oh my God, like, I'm out. Like, I'm going to be going off on a stretcher, giving the thumbs up to the fans, kind of injured.
As you're telling me the story, all I can do is envision the reality TV show where they're like, they're showing the big game and they're like, it's a side piece where you're talking to the microphone. We're doing really good. We're up 2-1. We got this.
Yeah.
And then there's a kind of like a slow-mo as you're jumping in the air and you're hitting the ball. And then they won't show the scene just yet before the commercial. It's just everybody's going, what? You go, ah! And then everyone's like, what's going on? What's going on? And then there's a camera shot of the ambulance coming. So we're all in suspense of what happened at Lake Life.
I think this is the 4th week in a row you have created some kind of awesome 80s movie from something I've done in life.
Well, this is a reality TV show. I branched off from the 80s movies.
Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
I am a producer. I got to keep going, man. I mean, there's openings at Marvel. There's no more Spider-Man anymore. We got to make some stuff happen. So Lake Life is going to be in the MCU.
That's fine. So I hit, and I thought, like I said, I thought I broke my ankle in half. And I ended up landing on my stomach, and I just couldn't get up. I could not get up for basically 5 minutes. I could not, like, roll over onto my back to kind of get myself up. And the worst part about it was I don't like that kind of attention. Like, when I'm hurt or something like that, or I remember being hurt in soccer back in the day and people gathering around you, I try to, like, kind of get away from that. I need, like, that, like, leave me alone for 5 minutes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me. Let me just yell and curse a lot underneath my breath and kind of just get the anger out, get the hate out.
How many people that you only, like, kind of know will come up and, hey, Scott, you all right? What's going on?
Well, that's...
Do you need help getting up?
That's kind of where I'm going with this. All of a sudden, it's dead quiet. I hear the quiet where it's just like me groaning on. Now, there happened to be a bunch of people watching the game, because people will come out and watch the games from the community sometimes, or boyfriends of the people, I mean, girlfriends of the dudes who are hanging out, wives will come watch, and the other team will bring, they'll come, set up lawn chairs, have a beer. Dead silent. And I'm like, oh, God. And a couple of my teammates come over, a couple of the other teammates come over, kids I used to coach were on that team. And they're like, oh, you're all right, you're all right. My wife comes over. My wife's friend comes over. Like, oh, God, God. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I feel the swelling in the shoe just going, like, just my shoe getting tight immediately.
At any point, did anybody say the name Alex Smith while you're on the ground?
Oh, God. Oh, I mean, in my mind, I know that could have been what happened. So eventually I'm able to turn over and get myself up to my feet, and I just limp away, like, out into the grass field, like, as far away as I can get from those people. And so I try to get up, and my first thought was like, oh, I'm up, I can play. I get to step up, I go to take my first step, and it's like, nope, we're not playing anytime soon. So we ended up winning the game, and I'm resting my foot the whole time. That was our last game of the season, probably the last game I was going to play. And I just see this thing going, it's just like growing and growing. And I'm like, shit, I don't want to go get an x-ray. Like, I don't want to do. I had vacation, and it was Thursday, so I was leaving for vacation Saturday morning, and this was Thursday night. And I'm like, my whole vacation is based upon like 40 people of my family going into the lake and swimming around. And I'm like, I'm going to be sitting in a lawn chair all week. Like, I'm already starting to get kind of, this sucks. You know, like, I hate being injured. So we ended up, we kind of celebrated the win. We had a couple beers and relaxed, and I was debating going to the emergency room.
Now, before you continue, was there a moment while you were sitting in a wheelchair and they gave you the championship trophy of the Lake Life Volleyball Tournament?
Well, you would think that would happen, but this was the last game to get into the playoffs, so we still had the whole playoffs to go. So this was this is the last regular season. All
right, so there's drama for my reality TV show. Can Scott come back for the big championship?
Okay. Well, I think we're going to get there in a minute. So
okay.
I get home. I finally have the balls to take off my shoe and sock, and I could post it on our – when this episode comes out, I could post it on our Instagram and show you my ankle is gnarly already. And I was like, oh boy, it looked broken.
Not to spoil it for anybody, but the word grapefruit was said looking at your ankle.
Now, I had injured this ankle, I want to say about 5 years ago, playing basketball at the gym. Like there was a basketball court, a pickup game. I came down, rolled the ankle. And I remember I couldn't even get down my stairs, and I had to and of course, being a stupid idiot, I didn't rehab anything. I didn't, I didn't PT anything. So it swelled every time I did anything, really ran before this. So I can only imagine what this is going to do now. But anyway, so I go on vacation and they give me crutches. The crutches lasted me approximately a day. I don't know if you've ever had crutches. They are the most miserable thing in the world. I remember when I was a kid, I'm like, crutches look cool. They are not cool.
You were a weird kid to be around, probably.
Dude, they hurt your armpits so bad. My armpits are burning afterwards. And there's just so much. And I guess you're supposed to kind of use the pressure on your hands, but it still hurts your armpits.
That would not fit me because that is like the one area I can't stand anybody touching that. If you ever want to find out what's it like for me to punch you, sneak up and touch me in the armpit. The first reaction is literally a fist.
Oh man.
I can't explain what it is, but it's just something sensitive on it. There have been times I've woken up from a dead sleep screaming because Callie's in the bed and she stretches out her paw and it hits me in the armpit.
Stop.
Well, I didn't hit her.
That's why the
Callie!
That's why the cat has no tail, right?
You
touched my armpit. You know what? I warned you. Come here.
I just picked it up by the tail. I told you. Went to the garage. Your new name is Stubba.
So all vacation, this thing's starting to swell and bruise. So purple on the bottoms of my feet, purple into the toes, purple everywhere. It's swelling. It's awful. Luckily, my cousins happen to be physical therapists, three of them that are actually there. And he actually one day, he sat down here. He's like, let me do some work on you. And he spent almost 45 minutes. And he was I don't know if you – he was able to take the swelling and squeeze it up my leg. That's how it was that much fluid, where I could actually notice the swelling being pushed into my leg, into my calf. You know those chachi things at like Spencer's and stupid stores where they're hard to hold, those slippery things.
Mm-hmm,
that's what my ankle felt like. He was and he moved the fluid up my leg. He's like, this is bad, man. He's like, this is really bad.
Were you bringing over your little cousins? Were they playing with it? And all kind of like silly putty?
Yeah.
Putting some newspaper up to it. Look, the family circus is on Uncle Scotty's leg.
Guys, after you're done swimming, come play with the fluid for a little bit.
Oh, Mom, I don't want to play with the fluid. Your uncle's in intense pain. You play with this fluid now.
So they gave me all these fancy tape jobs and things that were supposed to increase blood flow and some exercises to do. Got back from vacation on the following Saturday and still not very good, still hobbling on the house, got a brace. But Tuesday comes, and what had happened was the playoff game was rained out. Now we're facing the same exact team on Tuesday night, okay, for the finals in the Lake Championship.
Lake Life Volleyball Championship. Well, I guess this is the semifinals, right?
No, yeah. Because they played the semis on Tuesday. They played the what was supposed to be the finals on Thursday, but Thursday got rained out. So now Tuesday. So now I'm sitting there Tuesday, still swollen. The bruising's kind of gone, but still, you know, eggplant. Not eggplant. What do we call it? Cantaloupe?
Grapefruit.
Grapefruit. What fruit did we call that thing? And I'm like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dress to play, and then when we warm up, I'm going to see if it's possible for me to kind of even put this together. So what I decided to do an hour before the game was I took 3 or 4 Advil. I had a beer or two. And I strapped my foot in. So I took a compression band, like an ace band, strapped it in, put a tight sock over that, and then took a brace and put it on that. So my goal was, okay, by game time, the Tylenol should kick in.
It was extra strength Tylenol.
It was. Right? It was.
Okay, okay.
It was.
Then it makes sense. Makes total sense.
So we're warming up, and I'm like, I feel okay, I'm able to hit. So I decided I'm going to give it a shot. I'm only going to play front row. So I would get subbed out in the back row because moving backwards was really tough. Moving forward, I was able to kind of jump off the other leg and hit, if that makes any sense. Or I was able to kind of keep my bad foot, like on my toes almost instead of down flat where it would hurt.
So got a little strategy here, doing a little Willis Reed. All right, all right.
It's so funny you said that right before I said to my buddy, I'm like, this is my Willis Reed moment. I don't have much in life, so this is it.
I'm hoping to say it ending in a KD moment, though.
No. Well, so
I got the winning shot, and then I popped my Achilles. So worth it, Lake Life champion.
So turns out, and I don't lie to our audience, Berlo. I don't lie to you here. It's probably the best game I played the entire season. All of a sudden, maybe the distraction of just trying to focus on not hurting my foot and just letting the ball. I'm playing good. I'm getting kills. I'm hitting the ball. And our idiot coach, we have a coach, or he's the guy that kind of organizes it. We win the first game. Okay. Second game, he puts in our B team for the second game. B team kind of gets smoked on playing that. And I told him before the game, I said, whatever you do, like, don't take me out for a full game if I'm going, okay? Because I don't want to sit down on this thing and then the adrenaline wears off and then I can't get back up. So we lose that game. We win the third game. All we got to do is win one more. And he starts subbing people in for the fourth game, other guys in. We lose the fourth game, and we lose the fifth game. We lost 3-2. He Pete Carrolled.
He had it. All he had to do was hand it off to Scott 1 yard. You got it. Limping into the end zone. No, we got to go for a pass, huh?
Now, I can't sound that righteous. It wasn't just me. It was like a couple other guys who were starters, and they were hitting well and really doing things. And I was just so mad, man. And you know how competition, I love to compete, and just losing that and playing on that. I was just like, we had this in the grass. We snatched victories. We snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat. No, I think we snatched. I don't. We did something where we lost.
Yeah, we
we snatched the victory.
I think it's grasp victory from the hands of defeat. So you just got to switch it around. Defeat from the hands of victory.
There we go.
We're
pretty smart here on Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah. Just give us about 5 sentences. We'll say the right phrase. That's our motto.
So we're sitting here 3 weeks to the day tonight. Still swollen. Still swells when I stand on. Trying some PT on my own that my cousin sent me. But tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, going for my first PT session. And we'll see how it goes. Kind of a bummer because I've been, you know, been able to go to the gym and work out and stuff, but not really able to do any running or anything with a lot of movement, basically a lot of sitting kind of exercises. Not great. I still, if I stand all day, I get the grapefruit kind of vibe. Maybe not a grapefruit, maybe an apple starts as an
Okay, it's improving. It's a smaller fruit.
No,
I just imagine your doctor just brings out a fruit basket and puts it up next to your knee and Scott.
Oh.
Naval orange, Scott. No. We need surgery.
So, yeah, it kind of blows, and I got to do it right this time is what I'm saying. I got to do it right. I don't plan on being sedentary anytime soon, so I need to get back to being able to run and do things like that. Now, speaking of running, Berlew, this is like a – I'm seeing like a – you are – you might be the – what's that? What was that movie? In the 80s. Oh, the running movie. What the hell is that?
The Running Man?
No, you're definitely not the Running Man.
Oh, that'd be so awesome. That's like one of my favorite 80s movies, man, with Richard Dawson and Schwarzenegger.
You went from nothing zero to sub-zero. No, sub-zero to nothing zero.
Who was that electrical guy? That was the greatest one. The one that sung opera. Remember that?
Yes, I do. But, dude, it has to be 20 years since I've seen that movie. Has to be.
Man. I got a feeling I'm going to end up watching it now that I brought it up. It's too good in my memory to not watch it again.
Maybe that could be our next Mount Rushmore. Top 4 80s movies.
Ooh. We still got to get past the last one.
I know. We got to do Italian. That'll be next week. That'll be next week. But I like this this new runner that I see. I see that you and the wife are both running. What brought this on?
Well, what basically put it on, I can thank the wife the most part. As we're recording this, and on Sunday will be our 1 year anniversary. So I'll just start by saying, Isabel, I love you. Thank you for a year. Let's try for another one.
That's not.
But in any case,
we'll just play this episode every year.
At least half a year. Half a year. Give me that.
We'll play this. But, we'll play this episode every year, so it just sounds like you're still around.
Scott, I've been divorced for 8 years now. Stop playing that same damn bit. I get it. We're both one for one. But any case, so when when the wife decided she wanted to kind of do some exercising, and she went to, as I've advertised on the show before, Team Octopus, which is a gym throughout Georgia where they do jiu-jitsu training and kickboxing and so forth. She kind of talked with some people there about doing healthier life. She was going to do a challenge they did there, but she decided just to, work on things. They gave her tips on like diet and so forth. And, she kind of went into the running thing, and I didn't do it at first. My biggest concern has always been my cardio. I always felt like if I do any kind of exercise, my cardio is just dead, and within like 5 minutes I'm miserable and I don't want to be doing it anymore.
Prefontaine was what I was thinking about.
Gotcha. Yeah
that's you now. Classic. That's you. definitely photoshopping your face onto him.
But so as she was getting more into it, they were getting her into like running, and like I said, I can walk forever. Like, literally, I've done like 7-8 mile walks and not blinked an eye. But anything that involves any kind of like jogging or running, I just can't get into it because I would just get out of breath and all. But as I was kind of helping her figure out where she could run and so forth, we went to like the local high school to do the track, and she's like, why don't you join me and kind of do it? So I'm like, all right. And she's like, I'm going to do a 5K. I'm like, oh, no way I can do a 5K, because I can walk a 5K, but I never thought about like doing any kind of
right,
any kind of thing with constant pace. But, you know, she kind of coaxed me into it, and I was able to get to a jogging pace where I felt kind of comfortable. I think the biggest thing, as many people say when doing exercise, the biggest key is to learn breathing through the nose versus the mouth. And I kind of did. And I did, I think my first time I did it was like in a, like a 10 and a half time frame. And
which is not, you know, that first, bad.
It ain't that. Yeah. I mean, that was better. Like I think in high school, that was, I think my best mile was around 10 and a half. So I was almost shocked I was in that time frame. So I kept on worrying. Like the first 3 days, just, I don't want to say miserable, but I wasn't coming off it saying, wow, that was enjoyable.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I would get kind of like the burning sensation in the lungs, and I'm like, ah, oh, this ain't for me, this ain't for me. But, you know, she kept at me, and we kept doing it, and slowly but surely, I was kind of getting into where I can get like a rhythm. So then it went kind of went from worrying about my breathing to like my knees and so forth, and I was able to kind of concentrate on that. So far this month, I think, look at my app, I think I've run about 65 miles this month, and if I keep up the pace, I'll actually do 100 miles in a month, which is like mind-blowing.
It's amazing.
In my head, because, I mean, yeah, 67.64 I'm at right now. And I will preface, some of it is like walking at work. Doesn't because, matter. Yeah, but it's kind of a fun feeling and all, because I've literally had my best miles of my life. At one time, I was able to get a mile under 9 minutes. I got it like 8:57, which is, I think my high school time, the first time I did a mile was like 14 minutes, 15 minutes, somewhere in that time frame. So yeah. It's a,
yeah, running.
It's a pleasant feeling.
Yeah, running. It's pretty. I felt like I've gone through different spurts of running my whole life, like on off, on off, on off. But I feel like it increases pretty quickly if you kind of stick to it. Like, and if you're injury free, I feel like your pace can, and your times cut down really quickly when you start, distance wise. Like when last year, I think I tried to do 30 runs in 30 days and I ended up doing it. It kind of sucked towards the end. I'm not going to lie. It was hurting bad, but I felt like even within like 6-7 days, like, oh, the distance isn't as bad, and I just find something I like to listen to and kind of zone out and whatnot. But I do. It is funny now. Like, I haven't run now in over a month because obviously, one, I've been injured for 3 weeks, and before that, I was kind of trying some different things and. I think it goes away so quick too. Like, I feel like if I ran right now, like, I'd be huffing and puffing, and it would take me probably 2 weeks to kind of get back to where I was.
It definitely gets to you if you don't keep it up, because like just because of different stuff I had to do, I had to take a couple days off here and there, and like the first run after you get back, it's kind of like, ooh, I'm huffing and puffing a little bit more than I'm used to and all. And when I think I'm in a rhythm, I look at my phone, I'm like, oh, I'm off my regular pace. So
yeah,
you definitely got to kind of keen in on that, and hydration as well, I've learned. Because I'm a guy who doesn't think about, yeah, I should probably have a couple waters before I do this workout, and then it's at the end, I'm just
you're making Wookiee noises.
The water bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really cool, man. I think it's good for now. How are your? Now you said you've never been a runner in your life, and you're putting up pretty impressive distance. How are your knees and like lower back and to some degree ankles feeling?
Everything seems to be well so far. I keep an eye on my left knee when I'm running. That was kind of when I.
Do you keep
finally
up?
Got on a.
I keep an eye on your high knee when you're running.
Oh, anytime, buddy. I saw what you did there.
I did that.
Yep. Yeah. I try to keep an eye on that just because, like I say, after I've done it a few times, I'm like, all right, the kind of the cardio thing is less of an issue where I'm kind of feeling. I don't feel pain in it, but it definitely around like the second mile, it feels a little different. I don't know how to describe it. It just
loosens up.
I don't know if I want to say numbing or something of an extent where I'm like, okay, if I don't maybe shift a little bit, this could be an issue or whatever. Right. So I haven't come across anything where I feel bad. In fact, my back's been better than ever and all because my lower back, if I like stand on like a hard surface for too long, like if I'm cooking something in the kitchen and it takes a lot of prep time or whatever, I'll notice when I sit down, like, oof.
I think that might be part of a tall guy thing too. Cause I get that too, cooking. Like sometimes the counter feels like lower, like all of a sudden it feels like it's way far away. I'm like, this stinks.
Yeah.
I need longer arms.
We got to find where Andre the Giant lived in North Carolina and buy his house.
You know what would be nice?
I think that will fit us.
Like a counter that like had a foot pedal and when you pumped it up like a dentist chair, like you could raise it or lower it.
Chair.
Yeah. That'd be a good invention. I think it's cool, man. I got to a point where the cardio part of it never really bothers me that much. It's my shins and my lower legs are not great. I think it's just from so many years of just pounding different things, and I'm trying to find out a way to, I don't know if it's my gait or the way I run, and who knows now. I don't see being able to run for at least another 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I forgot to say, my cousin diagnosed me with a high ankle sprain, 6 to 8 weeks recovery, he said. So what you see is the football players, and I am not a football player. Yep. So
we're going to put you on the IR. We'll bring somebody up from the practice squad to do the podcast next week.
Right. That's kind of where we've been. That's where we've been.
It'd be like, oh, Joe Carney, good to see you. Let's do that.
But yeah, man, I think it's cool, man. I think I think you're putting up some impressive miles like so quickly, which I was when you posted like the total or whatever it was, I was like, wow, that's a lot of mileage for a like someone who's just started running.
Yeah, I generally, for the most part, when we do a run, I do 4 miles. That's my,
pretty good, man.
I haven't run 5 miles. It was one of those things where there was a miscommunication between me and the wife where she said she was going to do 5 miles. So I stopped at 4 and I'm walking around like, what the hell is taking you so long?
I thought you were going to say where she said, please get 5 miles away from me. And I was a little close
from time to time. I mean, how did you think I made it to a year, bro? I'm going to slowly get into it. This Labor Day, we're going to get up at the buck crack of dawn and do an organized run in Villa Rica. So that'll be our first official organized 5K that we've done it plenty of times. The next year on the 4th of July, we're going to be doing a 7-miler. So we're going to have to work our way up to that. But I'm enjoying it. I know it's enjoyable because now when we go to the track and the little kids,
you take on the horses.
No, we haven't gone there yet.
I keep pace with the Clydesdales, bro.
I can keep up with them because I want to give them scratches, man. That's the key. They don't want it enough, all these football players. They keep running. But the football field where we go to, that's where they have, like, I think, I want to guess, like, fourth or fifth graders. They're practicing or whatever, but it gets so super damn annoying with the parents who are, like, standing there, and then they'll, as you're, like, saying, okay, you're in rows one and two. All right, I'm going to keep running on three, and then somebody backs up to three, then somebody backs up to four. Next thing you know, you're, like, arcing all the way to the gate to come back to the track, and that just drives you nuts, and especially when you're in the 2 to 3 mile mark. Yeah. See, it's just like, you goddamn kids.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big track guy because the redundancy gets to me. Like, I need to, like, kind of see different. So I don't mind the neighborhood, though, or there's, like, trails kind of in the woods that I don't mind.
If I could find, like, a straight trail, I would do that. Like, where we live, there's a ton of crazy hills, which we walk all the time. But I even told, like, Izzy used to try to run. I'm like, honey, this is not meant for running, especially since we're all beginners. You can't be doing that on. And God bless her. She's at like 109 miles this month. Or so
impressive.
God bless her. She works hard. She lost a ton of weight. I lost a decent amount of weight. I'm down to like 215. So I'm happy with that. That's probably the lowest I've been in God knows how long. So
sweet. So yeah, I mean, so now while you're, one day we'll do a podcast while you just hook a headset up and you just run the entire cast, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Sean Kemp, who gave you your nickname?
I just tweeted at him.
Oh, God, I'm going
to
die.
Just tweeted at him again, by the way, today. Just to keep the flow going. Well, every quarter of the year, you know, you got to check in with Sean.
It's
going to
happen eventually. Just say yes. Lenny Dykstra thought he wasn't going to say yes. We made it happen.
We make things happen. Speaking of Lenny Dykstra fighting the bagel boss guy, you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, celebrity boxing. He's supposed to take on that bagel guy. He's going to murder that guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That guy's like 5'1 or something.
If that. Yeah, yeah. And here's Lenny Dykstra. That's a pro athlete, man. That guy was, I don't care how old he is, he's a monster.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, plus he's been in jail, and he got the crap beat out of him in jail, so I figure he can take a punch.
Yes, yes, 100%. But, Berlo, I think it's... I think it's time to get out of here, unless you got anything else before we go.
I'll give a little fun little side story here at home and all. So, how do you feel when flies get in the house?
Hate it. Actually, we just moved into the new house. Another reason that schedule's been kind of clunky, just getting things in and having services. It's just been, you know, figuring out things. And one day, like the first week, maybe 4 days into living in the house, I had like a ton of flies. It was driving me nuts. And I couldn't figure out if they were getting in or they were just there. And like we moved in and then now they're trying to get out. I don't know, but it was driving me nuts.
Yeah, I can't say. I keep a clean house and I can't say. In fact, a former guest of ours, Martha Cameo, I went over her place for her birthday one time, and it was like a hot summer afternoon, and we were eating outside, and they're like, all right, we got to bring it inside. And when we came inside, like 10 flies came into the house. So like half of it was shooing flies away from the food and hit it with fly swatters.
You know
what's
even, it drives me madder? Fly paper. Disgusting. Mm. It's like they got to come up, but like all these years they haven't come up with something that's more appealing in public than fly. Like, is there anything worse than like at a public place where people eat and there's fly paper hanging?
I remember, I think it was a grocery store over here and all. Like, they give out like free samples, and I was eating some like free pretzels, and I looked over and they had like fly paper just hanging up with like 12 of them hanging on there. I almost gagged right there in the store.
Yeah. But that might have been good in 1920.
Yeah.
When the country was still developing. But once we got like food standards, fly paper should have been out there. Yeah. That's gone.
We're starting Space Force and going to Mars. We got to come up with something better than flypaper, okay? But in any case, what my point of the story was, so one day I was in the kitchen, and I'm like, huh, we got a couple flies in the house. It kind of irked me, but I'm like, all right, swat them. I think I killed like three or four in there. I'm like, all right, problem solved.
In one swing, right?
Not in one swing. I'm not that kind of ninja style.
That would have been. You were supposed to sell it.
Oh, okay. So, next day, I go in the kitchen. There's like five or six in there. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And on it disgusts me. I would go into my bathroom. I'm like, there's two or three flies in the damn bathroom. They're like taking over.
Oh, yeah.
And for
I
like.
I had the same thing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so like 3 or 4 days, I'm getting to a point where I'm getting close to getting like furious and all because I can't figure it out. Like every time we let the dog out, like I can't have a nanosecond. Like I have to literally slam the door the millisecond the dog's tail is out there. I'm so worried about
and that's
flies
why the,
coming out.
And now that's why the dog has no tail.
Yeah, well, I mean. I don't have a tail. Why do they have a tail? Come on now.
If you can have one, I can. If I can't have one, you can't have it either.
Exactly. So it drove me nuts. And then I'm putting stuff away, and I'm looking over, and with the healthy cooking that eating that Izzy did for a while, I was getting her avocados to put in her food.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were under some potatoes, and I look over, I see like the green netting where it comes in the bag, and I pick it up, and they look like kumquats, furry,
yeah,
all over. I'm like, bleh, bleh. And thank God I found it because now. I'm down to like one fly. Then I'm looking forward to killing that mofo.
I thought you were gonna say he's now your pet.
He's gonna get mounted in the man cave. His head will be there, and there'll be a little plaque there saying to all you other flies, remember this.
Yeah, that's the problem with avocados. Like if you buy them in bulk, you never finish them. But then if you only buy like one or two. You got to go out and get more avocados. It's like, man, yeah, like you got
to
find.
I still can't figure out: are they supposed to be refrigerated when they're not cut or not?
I don't refrigerate them, but I also have refrigerated them, and I've never noticed any difference. Like I feel like they just go at whatever rate they got to go.
That's a little weird thing. That's why I didn't blink an eye to it or thought about it because
avocados
are just there forever.
They're like a worse investment than a car. Like they depreciate so. So quickly that like you can't find a middle ground, and sometimes I feel like they just turn out of nowhere, just gone.
Yeah, they'll just turn on a snap and all. But luckily, we have the new website Avocado Max, where we're going to sell used avocados to people who can't afford the good stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, the people who can't get that stuff from Haas avocados, the Mexican place.
Right.
We're going to hook you up.
It's a good business plan. I think it's up there with some of your other business plans.
I can't fathom how this could fail.
So, guys, we've covered a lot today. We've covered ankle injuries, and we've covered radio shows. We covered avocados. We covered running flies. So, and we covered a great cause. And I think it's time for us to go. I know we're a little long, but we've been clunky. We haven't talked to each other. This was more of a catching up session for us, guys. So leave us be. Don't complain. Don't say it was too long. Don't let me look at the retention stats and see that you left the episode an hour and 40 minutes in. You stick to the end. To the end. If you're going to listen to an episode, you stick to the end, right? I mean, common sense.
Some of them will give you leeway on. Well, you know,
one or two.
Talk to us on Twitter or Facebook and be like, hey, I'm about to do episode 47. I'll look it up and be like, thumbs up. Go for it, buddy.
Yeah, there's a few that you're allowed to leave early, but not this one. This one was fantastic. Berlo, anything to promote before we get out of here?
Yeah, well, since we're getting close to October, I'm going to be promoting my little site, Michael Berlew Random Stuff, on Facebook. It's facebook.com/DABURLS721. I am bringing back Pumpkin Spice Whatever. For 31 days, I'll be doing pumpkin spice items. And since I got about 8 or 9 posts where I was tagged on it, I am aware of pumpkin spice spam, and that will be episode 1.
Whoa.
I'm not going to let you wait 31 days for pumpkin spice spam. You get it on day 1 because I got some plans for that spam.
So really, there's only like 30-something days total for them to wait until it's spam time.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, when this comes out, you got a 30-day notice. And then you get it right on day 1. I know how to keep my fans entertained,
gotcha.
Except for this show. I have no clue.
What do you people want?
I
saw today, I think Bush or something's putting out a pumpkin hard seltzer or something like that.
I got to look up. Like I get tagged on literally everything, and I appreciate people tag me away. I'll check it out because sometimes people see stuff on the internet and it's just like the joke meme. But yeah, we find out fast enough, and if I can get it, we're gonna do it. But remember, October 1st, pumpkin spice whatever, pumpkin spice spam.
Sounds good. Maybe you can make some pumpkin spice breakfast sandwiches with the spam. You can make pumpkin dishes with that spam.
Well, I'll tell you off the air the plan. I don't want to spoil it until October. So.
Gotcha. And guys, real quick, I'm going to promote this Thursday when this episode comes out is another edition of the Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Show at the wonderful Tap House 15. It is absolutely free. I think there's a couple seats left. We've been selling out left and right, and headliner Mark Riccadonna, one of my favorite comics in the entire planet, and also one of the most genuine dudes there is out there headlining it. So come on out. It is free show. All you do is buy a drink or two, don't be a cheapskate. Don't come if you're going to be a jerk, but come if you want to have a good time because the lineup is loaded. Aaron McGuire, very funny comic, Joan Weisblatt, myself, and Darren Patterson from the SNL podcast. So just another great lineup. Mm-hmm. And this might be the last show that is in the room the way it is because I have nothing to do with the restaurant, but we are expanding the room. So the room might get bigger, which means bigger shows.
Wow.
And a larger audience. So this might be the last one, show number 35. In this room.
Basically, if you want to know how the new setup is going to be, Google that Las Vegas stadium that the Raiders are going to move into.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that at Tap House 15. Just like that. If it doesn't end up like that, you call up Tap House 15 and go, how dare you?
So, guys, this has been fun. It's been fun to get back. We've been, like I said, piecing together episodes, not really being able to find times that line up. Our normal times have been filled with shows and commitments and vacations and injuries, and we'll be back once we pick this up. We'll be back full force with new guests, new topics, new ideas. So if you like what you heard today, please leave a review on iTunes and go check out our back catalog, because our back catalog is pretty kick-ass. That's all I'm going to tell you. It's
absolutely
pretty kick-ass. Go check it out. I mean, you could pick out anyone: John Walsh, Mark Summers, Victor Wooten, who knows. But other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. We'll see you later. Adios. Next week. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Adios.
See ya.